Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not a bank, which means it belongs to you and you get money back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. All the information is right there. And speaking of municipals, we have three of our elected municipal representatives here in the studio tonight. We have with us Mary Pat Clark.
Hi.
Baltimore City Council, District 12.
No, 14.
I meant 14.
Well,
12
yeah.
was next to you. That's
yes.
Carl Stokes.
Right. And it is next to me.
It is, well, literally and figuratively. And right down the road is the newly elected Nick Mosby from District 7. Congratulations on your win, and welcome to the show for the
Thank
first time.
Thank you so much. Thanks
Good
for having
you.
Me.
Yes. Good to have you. And you all are here at 410-319-8888. It's your time to talk to our city council reps. I want you to join us here, whether you live in their district or not. Whether you live in the city or not, you have ideas about the city. And if you live in Baltimore, Howard County, or across the bridge, you may work here, you may come here, you may care about the future of our city, which is caring about the future of our state. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. A lot has been going on in this town. And we want to talk about it. And newly elected Nick Mosby, and actually, in some way, you're newly elected, really, Carl, because you were there before, but
right.
you were appointed. And,
well, he's been
and
elected and then appointed
and now elected.
Yeah. So we're good. I'm glad. We're glad to be here. You know, at some point, the three districts come
converge.
Together. There's a common boundary somewhere around Wyman Park as we move toward Hamden.
Yeah, in fact,
yeah.
Councilman Mosby and I were both at a meeting in Hamden last night
yes.
where our two districts come together and there's a development project, we think, being proposed.
Are you talking about the Walmart project?
No. That's in Remington.
That moved from what is now Councilman Mosby's district to what is now my district,
correct.
Which is still three blocks away from Murray Pat's district.
You're talking about the Walmart project.
Yes.
Yeah.
25th
yeah.
Street Station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me just ask a question since we raised that.
Who raised it?
I did.
Okay.
We just mentioned it, so we'll just talk about it. Because there's one of the many things I want to talk about. I'm just curious. Where do you all stand on this Walmart issue? One of the interesting things when this subject comes up is, of course, the wretched record that Walmart has on its employees and unions and women. And,
sure, right.
And
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, whenever we have this discussion, we have community activists who oppose it, but it never fails that people from the community, working class people, white and black, mm-hmm. call this show and go, and Latino, and call this show and go, well, you know, Walmart may have its problems, but A, I might be able to get a job, and B, I can get cheap food.
And also so, C, in Remington, a lot of people said, I won't have to take two buses to shop.
To get my food.
So I, for one, I voted for that PUD, planned unit development. I voted for that development, but only after a long fight to get living wage established for the whole development, which we lost. But I still felt I still voted for it. I'm unhappy, however, with the policies, you know, the payment,
right.
the salary policies, but I hope there'll be a change across the city in the years to come.
Yeah, and so, Mark, I abstained on the vote.
I remember that.
I wanted to vote against it, frankly, but I had just gotten back into council. Many of the community leadership actually wanted it. I wasn't there long enough to risk going against my leadership at that point. I'm being a little facetious. But I did not feel strongly that they were going to do living wage. They are not committed to local hiring. They made some verbal quasi-commitment to do it. I thought it should be in writing. I thought there should really have been a community benefit fund established in writing for the community. You know, there's another full produce, meat, grocery store two blocks away from this, Safeway, of course, which is union, which is paying union salaries. People get paid $12, $15 an hour to start. That's not going to happen at Walmart. And if they start selling cheaper food, then we got to understand when they talk about new jobs, how many jobs also may be lost. In Landover, a Safeway closed when a Walmart opened not so far away from it, within a half mile. Now, we Americans, we do go for what's cheaper, what's foreign made, and then we complain that they're not making anything in America, right? And that we can't get jobs. But we're supporting places. I don't want to pick on Walmart.
Right, you can.
Where you go and you make less money, you got to pull teeth to get health care benefits. They make you part-time so they don't have to give you health care benefits, on and on. I say don't be against the Walmart. It's the biggest in the world. But make them take care of folks who are going to go to work for them.
Well, that can happen. It has happened in other places. Unfortunately, it didn't happen in Baltimore for all the efforts that were made, and that's regrettable. And in fact, Safeway, two blocks away,
sure,
came in and testified against living wage that would have covered all the retailers in the city of major size.
Even though
size.
They're already over living wage themselves.
Yeah, but also when you factor in Walmart, you have to look at the common thread of that community, and a lot of the bright spots of small businesses in Baltimore City are directly in the vicinity or in that area, and the implications associated with Walmart being there. So I think what could have been done is just a better stakeholders meeting of the residents, the small business community, sitting down and trying to understand truly what they would want out of that site and truly the needs of the site. So I think the small business piece is something that has to be factored in as well.
You're absolutely right,
Nick. And I honestly, the developer doesn't really give a damn. I'll just say that. He doesn't give a damn about those issues. I'm going to tell you, if Lowe's had come, three or four hardware stores, there are small hardware stores in Hamden, in Waverly. A guy just sunk his life savings into opening a beautiful hardware store.
Mean Ace.
Ace, right.
Yeah, John Elliott.
And so you can't tell me that people we'll continue to go there to the small stores. It's just an American thing. We'd rather go to the big box place to get a key made.
Not me.
Yeah, not you.
I always go to my local hardware store.
Yeah, we do. And I'm not saying we're saints. I'm just saying.
No, we need a key.
Look at So there are a lot of people that go to Home Depot for a key.
For a key?
Yes, amen.
Now that is very energy wasteful.
Right.
If you live miles and miles from one.
So, folks, you can join us here, 410-319-8888. We want you to join this conversation. You have thoughts about the city, anything from the Grand Prix to anything that's on your mind at 410-319-8888. For three of our city council representatives, newly elected Nick Mosby and veterans Mayor Pat Clark and Carl Soakes. 410-319-8888.
I think veteran means old, Murray. I'm not sure.
Me, honey. I want to pick up on what Councilman Mosby said, Nick Mosby, about small businesses, because they were in great peril from this development. You're absolutely right. And now Baltimore's businesses are really entering into a buy local campaign that I hope and think will catch fire. The money that we invest buying things like our Christmas and Hanukkah gifts locally, in local stores, that money stays in the community.
Right.
And I think that the more we can do that, the better off we'll be. And that movement's growing here in Baltimore.
So I do want to talk about local buying as well. But let me throw one of the things we were going to talk about on this show with you all happened a few weeks ago. And one of the things that inspired it was this emails we got, people calling us up, saying that inside a committee, and you'll refresh my memory which committee it is, the bill to free, and you know, I don't think you were not sitting there yet, but I'm curious to see what you would have done had you been sitting there, Nick. the bill that Mary Pat Clark put in, that, if I have this right, would have exempted certain urban agriculture groups from property taxes.
Community gardens.
Mm-hmm. And it was not allowed out of committee. It was defeated. You voted against it, Carl. Right, and you,
I did. It was in my committee. I was the chair of the committee. I'll talk to it. Go ahead. When you're ready.
You can say what you can start. I mean, because there's a lot of people who that look at that. You know, we give all these tax breaks to these super
millionaire. You got to be a millionaire to get a tax
millionaire
break.
Developers.
We got to draw the line at your local community garden.
But you
yes.
But,
that was Murray's argument there. So the big guys and the little guys, I say no to. But so. First of all, it's a misnomer. It's not an urban farming bill. They wrote an article calling it an urban farming bill. It's not an urban farming bill. It's a bill about land preservation and tax credits. And as a matter of fact, it's about green space, not urban farming.
Well, so it could be a rock. It is urban farming as well as community gardens.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought we were going to have
Okay. Yeah. Oh,
but
let me let you finish.
It is. Rock gardens, flower gardens. Urban farm, not a farm, but an urban farm, not an urban farm, but a garden that grows vegetables. And so now there is not anyone in the city of Baltimore, find someone if you want, but you can't, who's paying property tax on a green space that they're using as a garden or as a small farm. They don't pay property taxes. So this was about one particular entity who wanted to be sure that forever we'd grant them a tax break. And I'm not saying that the reason they want to is wrong, except they don't pay taxes now.
Because
the state
– they negotiate with every space with the state tax assessment people.
The state law says they don't have to pay tax if they fill out the form and ask for it. They're exempted, and every 5 years they have to come in and renew that. Just like I get $3,700 in tax exemption for my personal my property tax on Guilford Avenue, but if I don't send in the forms, then I don't get it. They will tax me. I'm saying this.
Okay, but what,
nobody
why,
pays
can I
it
say
now.
Something
nobody
about
is taxed
the bill?
For urban green space. Nobody.
First of all, it's Warren Branch's bill, Councilman Branch's bill.
Okay.
I was next in line as a co-sponsor. Second of all, the group that my colleague is talking about is Baltimore Green Space. It is a nonprofit, but it is subject to taxation on property, on real property. Baltimore Green Space, here's what happens. Oh, my gosh, there's a blighted lot in the community. It's a mess. Some landlord abandoned it, walked away. The building burned down. This happened on Homestead Street in my district. The building burned down. Some neighbors finally got the city to clear it. It's a mess. Let's start a community garden. Well, it's owned by an absentee landlord. Can't locate him. City says, go ahead and do the garden. And because we can't reach him. We can't find the owner to get permission. So on they go with the garden. Next door to Ace Hardware that we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And so lots of people in the Better Waverly community are gardening there, growing their own groceries, et cetera, et cetera. That was the beginning of a dilemma because guess what? The owner's agent shows up and says, oh, I want to build a high-rise apartment building here. Well, wait a minute. What are you doing? You're the people that walked away from this years ago. We've been taking care of it. You don't really have good title to this. Anyway, what happens is that until that property goes out of absentee ownership and into Baltimore Green Space, which is a land trust, anyone can come and take it away or try to, but Baltimore Green Space will take title to it on behalf of the local neighbors who are farming. Okay, that's what the bill was about. It's based on a state conservation bill that gives tax credits if you are preserving land and if you are growing things. In other words, if you're saving green space.
All right. So let me push it one step further.
Yeah.
Nick, I don't know.
No, it's not that complicated.
No, wait. Before you open the phone, I'm going to push this one step further.
Go ahead.
And Nick, do you want to say anything before I do?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate urban agriculture. In my neighborhood, Reservoir Hill, as community association president, we actually went through the adopt a lot procedure. We adopted an abandoned lot and we took it over, and we raised money to build a fence and do all this other thing. And then, of course, we have a very well-known White Lock farm in our community as well. So I understand the importance to urban agriculture and to farming. In a community. The one thing that I would hold back from the bill, and I didn't get a chance because I wasn't on the council yet, to understand all the details and all the specifics behind it, is the impact of the amount of land in which the trust would want to try to take over. And I think that that's where some of the hesitation is on a bill like that. Just the broad stroke approach of allowing a trust or individual or group or organization to, take over and acquire land in that manner. Because we know that this is a consistent issue all throughout Baltimore City today.
And it is. So let me raise the issue and push it a tad further. Then we're going to open the phones, and Leo and Russ and other callers are going to come to your
calls. Can I just respond for 1 minute?
Very quickly, because I do want to push
on. All right, I will be quickly. Basically, it is when local neighbors who are farming or gardening come to that they want to save the land. It's owned by they know not who. We can't find that person. They can't own it because they can't afford taxes. The neighborhood association doesn't want the liability. Green space was created to take title and oversee the operations that are already going on. So they have, as a matter of record, 4 lots.
Yeah, but where does that
and
end?
They pay no taxes on any of them.
So wait. I would like to push this one a little bit further.
Okay.
Beyond this bill. And then we're going to open the phones here. Leo and Russ, the first two callers up. Because I have the thing, and you might take umbrage at this, but I'll say it anyway, okay? That I think many city leaders don't think creatively or innovatively about what we face in this town. We get stuck in the same old bull that we get stuck in.
Right.
Season after season after season. So when it comes, let's say, urban agriculture, and I know you have this thing, Carl, about giving anybody a pilot or a TIF. I mean, you do have a thing about that.
I do have a thing
about that. Not necessarily isn't a bad thing either. You have that, right?
Right.
So,
but why start with this?
But let me say, right. So
they don't pay taxes. Wait, please.
I told you he would. He's going to have to tell me to be quiet.
We have over 1,000 acres of empty land in this city.
Right.
1,000 acres. There are people like Five Seeds Farm, Denzel Mitchell, and many others, and people who are in business as well, like Teddy Rouse and others with their farms, that are ready to expand and make farming a major industry in Maryland. Some studies I've read said up to 10 people an acre can get jobs that pay decent wages, building hoop houses that serve food all year long. $100 billion a year is spent on food in Maryland around here.
Right.
If we got 2 to 5% of that just in the city by growing our own food with farmers who care about it and distributed it locally, which means you didn't need a grocery store because it's there and you had fresh food all year long, that you could create a world here that doesn't exist, that some cities are trying to move ahead, and we could be ahead of the curve doing things in a very different way than we do them now.
Yeah, urban.
And if that requires a little property tax break to get these farms started, why not? If you give them to Pat Arrakis and you give them to everybody else who goes and lives in this town, why not give it to some people trying to do something that benefits a lot of people, pays decent wages, gives jobs, and feeds people?
We agree. I think you're arguing a straw man here. We already do that.
Yes, we do.
We don't charge anybody any property tax for urban gardening or urban farming. And I'm supportive.
We're talking about for-profit and maybe non-profit
and Bill
businesses
Strever
here.
And all of the people who are trying to do the hoop farms. I am very supportive, as long as Murray Pat and probably Nick just spoke about it. So we're pushing this. We're saying do it. But, you know, this bill was moving faster than we could digest
it. Yeah, it was 2 years old when it got to committee.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all.
18 months.
It was introduced.
18 months old.
It was not.
It was so.
Okay.
Let the newbie have a shot here. Nick, go ahead.
He's got to earn his time.
Yeah. Once again, I just think it's pulling back the covers and trying to dig into the details associated with how a bill like this can affect the city of Baltimore for years to come. We know that clearly we have an issue with vacant lots. We clearly have a lot of green space, and we know that we want to become a more sustainable city for the future, and urban agriculture is key to doing that. But I think it's very important to look at the bill. I unfortunately, like I said, I wasn't on council, so I didn't get a chance to have all the heated discussions.
We'll bring it back.
You'll bring it back, and I'll be more than happy to dig in and look at it. But urban agriculture is key. Like I said, in my neighborhood alone, we have the White Lock farm. I mean, we have tours that come there. We have all types of people that come and try to learn from the White Lock farm gardeners and try to get assistance in starting farms. So I'm totally for urban agriculture.
Yeah.
We all are.
So the question is then, let's open the phones here. But the question is then, how do we get it moving? What has to be pushed in this city?
It was the finance department that was the reason the administration opposed it.
You're not talking about that bill.
Oh, right? I'm sorry.
What I'm saying, actually having some advocates saying we have 1,000 acres in this town, why aren't we using it?
But some people are moving. Civic Works is moving.
Some people are.
Right. Well, you want us to get into a bigger discussion about planning or lack of in city government? You want to get into that discussion?
I could.
We don't have a vision. We don't have a plan, Mark. So we have to depend on a Civic Works or a Bill Strever or other folk who are going to grow this agricultural urban farming thing in the city. We're going to have to depend on the visionaries like those I just mentioned to make this happen. We're not going to do a citywide vision on this, brother.
Well, Manami Brown is a name I would like to say as the visionary, who and Nzinga Onufera-El, who were, along with Civic Works, mm-hmm. who were the visionaries who brought the hoop houses to the campus of Lake Clifton.
Right.
And so they brought it. They had a vision. I mean, Manami mm-hmm. Brown is the city 4-H director, and she's an amazing woman, and so is 4-H, an amazing organization. And she was working with us at the Lake Clifton High Schools, and she helped and worked with Civic Works and Ted Rouse and everybody else to bring those hoop houses to Lake Clifton campus. And what we need is we don't need the kind of financial incentives that big developers need. We just need a few breaks along the way mm-hmm. because people such as Manami and Nzinga and Ted, they're already rolling.
And Denzel Mitchell.
Yeah, right. I'm You're sorry. Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let me open the phones, get our callers in here. 410-319-8888 is the number to take a call before we go to break and come back from the break. Leo, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone. How
are
you
doing?
Hi. Mr. Burris, how are you?
I'm fine. You famous city council people.
Mr. Burris, hi.
I'm doing great. Look, I got three requests or resolutions I'm asking you, the three of you, to introduce into the council.
Okay.
My first resolution request is regarding a comprehensive city audit of all agencies, audit of all city agencies to be conducted within the first 6 months of this new year. Mm-hmm. I'm pointing the finger at Joan Pratt. We got to get cracking. We got to know what's happening in all city agencies. My second, and I'm requesting you do this by resolution. Number two, the Baltimore Development Corporation needs to conduct a daytime and an evening hearing in all neighborhoods of the city, particularly in the inner city. What will the Baltimore Development Corporation do in concert with community leaders in the inner city to develop jobs and create businesses that will ensure work for everybody? And they need to do this pronto. And my last resolution that I'm asking you guys to introduce regards the police commissioner. I'm asking you to introduce a resolution to call for the firing of Police Commissioner Fred Bielfeld, based on the fact that the police department, by its own admission and by the recent report of the mayor, is in a mess. Poor supervision, poor training. Accountability's got to fall somewhere, and it needs to fall. We need to start on the shoulders of the police commissioner. Sean Rim case, don't forget it, and the case of Sean Bell and William Torbett. Nothing resolved in those cases. We're being stonewalled as a community, and we need action. We need the city council to get involved.
So,
we need you to do
okay, now we have, let me just, thank you, Leo. We're going to take a break and come right back. with our three city council representatives. We're going to ask them to hit these questions fast and hard. We have a full bank of callers. A lot of people want to join this conversation, so I'm going to remind you all of that as we get out here. New Councilman Nick Mosby, Mary Pat Clark, Carl Stokes here in the studio. 410-319-8888 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. We are here with 14th District City Councilperson Mary Pat Clark, 12th District City Councilperson Carl Stokes, and the newly elected 7th District City Councilperson Nick Mosby. 410-319-8888. Nick, you want to grab this first? From Mr. Burroughs?
I guess talking about the comprehensive audit of all city agencies and the conduct of the BDC and trying to have meetings in the community. I mean, I think we can go down the path and, take a laundry list of things that we should do and things that we should drive towards. I know me starting out in my administration and trying to talk to constituents and neighborhood presidents is trying to drive priorities, right? And I think our priority right now is trying to drive a more sustainable Baltimore City. And I think we do that at the shoulders and the backs of our children. Looking at issues that all the systemic and socioeconomic issues that impact and face the city, I think are directly tied and kind of come at a crossroads of our children. So that's where my focus is. I think it's a great idea if we can audit every agency in 3 months and have the money to do that. I just think that's a real tough challenge and a real tough task. I think, like I said, my whole thing is trying to drive, real innovative solutions to aspiring our kids to dream, right, other than what they see on their street corners or on television. So that's where my focus is, and that's where my head will be for the next 2 or 3 months.
Carl?
Well, 3 weeks after I got back into the city council, I asked for an audit of the Department of Rec and Parks. Almost 20 months later, I still don't have the audit of Baltimore's Rec and Parks. I think we ought to know where our money is. I think money is mismanaged all over the city. I think that I'm not saying anyone's stealing anything, but I am saying that we don't know where our funds are. And I think there is money in Rec and Parks, for example, to do some of the things that we say we don't have money to do. I actually know that there's money sitting in places that are, frankly, in between accounts. And so I believe very strongly that we have to call for strategic prioritization of departments to audit and give transparency.
I agree with you, Councilman Stokes.
Thank you.
I remember a couple years ago in the city council when the finance department had an audit that they requested, so it was their idea, and discovered millions of dollars that they had in finance. Remember this? That they had sort of misplaced in a fund, and it turned out that I want to say it was $40 million or something. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was a lot of money that they didn't know. Now, I have to say, in fairness to them, that finance is the one who undertook to get the audit done of their finances. But they found money they didn't know they had.
So,
and we were able to put it into the budget.
So
we,
what's the problem? What is the...
People just can't keep track of the money.
No. What is the fiscal or administrative problem with having a thorough all-out audit of all the agencies in the city government. Who would do it, and
I mean, it is the job of the controller of the city of Baltimore to conduct audits, internal audits.
And who can tell her not to do it?
Well, she has to make a decision on her own. She can do as many.
But could the city council say we are asking?
Well, you can say that, but she will say that she has X number of auditors, and it's going to take, you know, and she can't do it all at the same time unless we want to spend some money and bring and hire some auditors in to do it. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying it's not simple to get that many audits done.
Mark, when you talk about innovation and new and creative ways, I think the problem in Baltimore City a lot of times is we look at budgets and we lump money together. So I say, Mark, you know, this year we're going to spend $10 million to fix up the roadways and sidewalks in Baltimore City. But I don't tie an objective or performance rating to that. I don't say, hey, we want to fix, we're going to put $10 million in this budget and we're going to fix up 20,000 miles worth of street and sidewalk, right? And then at the end of the year, we've only did 15,000, but all the money is gone. Or at the end of the year, we've done 25,000 and all the money is gone. I think over time, when you develop a cost-effective, performance-based system, you drive efficiencies. And I think right now, there is a lot of inefficiencies because of the way we lump our money together. So all corporations drive off of objectives and performance ratings.
Okay, I don't want to get stuck on this all night.
No, but I'd like to say something about the BDC and jobs. We created the Inner Harbor because we needed to replace our loss of manufacturing jobs. It was all about J-O-B-S. Mm-hmm. And now we have jobs in the Inner Harbor. In the hospitality industry that we've invested money
that
in.
That don't pay living wages or benefits.
That aren't paying living wages to the people that we were creating the jobs for. So BDC, it's their job to understand and remind us and help us. It's all about jobs, the Inner Harbor, in the hospitality industry, and jobs that support a family that are full-time with benefits that pay a living wage. And that's where we need to be going. And I would like to add, since it was raised, I support Commissioner Bielefeld, and I do so from the perspective of two districts that I represent, which are have great commanders, which have great deputy commanders, and which are working, in my eyes, as hard as they can to do a decent job for the citizens. I mean, it's not always successful.
I don't want to stay on it either, so I'll let it go as well. I just think deployment could be a lot better in the police department. I will say that. Deployment is not great.
Well, you could look at that at city council level. So before we go to Clarence Russ Donald email, why not treat property like abandoned cars?
Haul it away?
No, take it over.
Take it over. You can't take property. There's some constitutional issues here. You can't simply take someone's property without a due process. And maybe people think it's too convoluted a due process, but you simply can't do it.
And I think a lot of people think that it's too easy to just sit on and hold property in the city of Baltimore, right? So the whole idea of maybe having different tax hikes associated with abandoned property.
Yeah, all right.
I think in Baltimore City, we have to truly start driving that.
Could you do that in the council? I mean, several supplemental candidates suggest, can you change that in the council?
No, state.
The state would have to give us permission in the city to enact a higher property tax rate on vacant properties.
Right.
So make it a financial burden to maintain a vacant. Yeah.
So I'll tell you what, when we had the Annapolis Summit,
let's talk
January 11th,
about
I will ask all three leaders that question.
Yes.
Okay, great.
On January 11th.
Yeah, D.C.
All
does
right.
it, and you know, people pay like 99 cents instead of $2.12. Seriously, in D.C., homeowners are paying 99 cents.
But people who don't take other properties are paying a lot more.
But they're paying $50 or something like that.
Let's go back to the 410-319-8888. Donald, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Donald. Welcome.
Yes, how you doing, Cole? How you doing?
Hey, Donald.
Hi.
How are you?
How you doing, Mary?
Hi, Donald.
How you doing, Mark? Getting back to the issue of urban farming, urban gardening. Basically, y'all just explained what the problem is. It's the legalities and the technicalities as far as the ownership of the particular land,
if
I'm correct, that the city would have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But folks are dealing with the situation as it is, as it exists right now. these lots are abandoned lots.
Right.
And the people are using these lots not just for farming purposes in itself, but also as an educational tool.
Sure.
In the
community. Absolutely.
Looking at it in a much more larger, broader sense of development, not just not future development, but what exists right now, which is trash, blight, mm-hmm. and everything else.
We agree.
Mm-hmm. And the city has been negligent in being able to maintain, even though when some of the property is theirs, and also some of the properties of the federal government. But now we come back into the situation of that the educational potential of, instead of locking up some of these young teenagers, mm-hmm. of diverting them over to a program that would have educational benefits, which would take them into horticultural, agricultural, mm-hmm. and the biological sciences.
Sure.
So these are some of the things that we're looking at as far as for the young youth concerned, but also at some point, maybe the city want to hook up with Nick's Farm and be able to do some kind of programs and farming type of programs.
Nick's Farm.
No, so the thing is that we're not going to be able to move forward if we don't have creative ideas,
sure.
creative thoughts, and we don't open our ears and eyes up to those that are outside of the municipal or outside of the network.
Amen.
You're right, 100%. Thanks, Donald.
All right.
Thank you, Donald.
All right.
We all agree there.
Farmer Mosby.
Listen. 410-319-8888 is number here. Nick Mosby, Carl Stokes, Mary Pat Clark in the studio. Three of our city council representatives. The council is closed for the season. It goes, opens back up January?
January 9th.
January 9th.
Yeah. Right.
And Russ, you're on the air.
You and your guest.
Welcome, Russ.
Mark, in full disclosure, let me tell you that Councilman Stokes is a longtime friend. We grew up together in East Baltimore, and we supported him in the last election.
Thank you.
But let me just say that, this is Russ from Lafayette Avenue.
Sure. Hi, Russ. How are you?
Good, good. Listen, what I wanted to talk about was jobs, because the question has to be asked, where are they going to come from? We know the big boys aren't going to do them, the trillion-dollar deals, because they're sitting on $1 trillion of cash that they won't spend, because they, too, want to make Obama one-term president. When you look at what's online now with technology and so forth, we did do another Chevrolet plant or Sparrows Point. It wouldn't look like it did when my father worked there because of technology, machines, computers, and so forth. So where are the jobs going to come from? And I think to get to this, my point here is, what is a small business? We need some definition of terms. Are we talking about the 50 million, 250 million cab companies? Because that's not where jobs started. Jobs started, like Carl would know that, at Mr. George Nguyen's store on the corner where I worked part-time after school and got my first job and so forth. And I asked that question as a businessman because I have a small company. I call it a micro company, I guess, in today's terms, because I have a taxi permit and about five vans that I'm in the process of selling. But with a company that grosses $150,000, $180,000 a year, there's no help to get people employed. I mean, there's no you do this, we'll do that for you type of things that you can take on people, buy new equipment and so forth. They keep changing the rules. So, like, for example, now, if I wanted to put new equipment on the street, I'd have to get minibuses that have a center aisle. So we're talking in terms of jobs. We all know the importance of jobs, but where the heck are they going to come from? And a local example before I get off the air, Mark, we just built the interconnector, county connector down there.
All right.
It's a toll road, okay?
Yeah.
It's a toll road that has no toll booths or no toll collectors. They are the jobs. What are we going to do?
The jobs are going to come from people like you, and until we are able in this nation to meet your needs, practically speaking, we are in a quandary, and we better get out of it fast.
Well, I was going to say, here's one thought, just one. We have to undersell our land. We have to, Mary Pat, cut the tax rate in the city by half because we're giving huge tax rates to a few people who are using that to create jobs. They're not new jobs, but if you go to the Harbor, the Inner Harbor East, et cetera, we're giving away millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And if you go, you know, the Inner Harbor, it's a second city going on there. There are plenty of jobs. There's 10,000 more people living there than there were 20 years ago. And yet we are non-competitive with our taxes in the city. And we've got to be more competitive if we're going to continue to double charge everybody. So here's the jobs. Here's where it comes from. when we become a lot more competitive, we will start to grow the city. Neighborhoods would get stronger. People would buy these vacant properties. Right now, investors nor residents are that interested in buying properties in this town that they can turn into home ownership because it costs too much. If you start rebuilding the town with real people, then there are construction jobs. Then there are small businesses, because as soon as you put up 100 homes, there's a new cleaners that goes up. There's a food store. There's a pharmacy that comes in. Jobs are created. Jobs grow. The guy who owns a small business is willing now to invest in his own business rather than we take it out of his pocket. He's willing to invest in his business. He can hire a second person, a third person, a fourth person. He can grow his business.
Yeah, I think we have to do a better job of focusing on the neighborhoods as well as small businesses. I think that today the average Baltimorean lives in Baltimore and they deal with the property taxes, but that's not the number one reason that's increasing our churn of people leaving the city. I think when you look at it, it's young families who have school-aged children will start to think about that. They'll leave the city. It's the sanitation, the crime issues. I think people start looking at the systemic socioeconomic issues that affect this city, and that's their number one reason for leaving the city. I think if we put a stronger emphasis on our children and on our neighborhoods, if we start to get some vibrancy back in our communities, I think that we'll see the real estate boom that we saw a couple years ago when the property tax was just as high as it is today, when people felt like they were taking advantage of buying into a community. So I think, once again, I don't think it's necessarily, and I would love to lower the tax rate tomorrow, but I don't think that's necessarily the thing that's going to drive people directly back into Baltimore City.
Well, let me just say
one thing. It's also critical not to just bring people back in the city, but keep people. I mean, if you're bringing 20,000 people into the city every year, but losing 21,000, then that difference is none. So I think it's a point of slowing down that churn and developing those city services and developing that interest in the community of people that truly love Baltimore.
It's jobs that attract people, and decent jobs. You look at Under Armour, born and raised in Baltimore City.
Exactly.
A lot of hiring going on in Baltimore City. Because they came up with a way to manufacture sports clothes. I don't know, you don't sweat or something. Whatever it is, it works. And it's worldwide now.
Yeah.
And they're growing and expanding. So because somebody had an idea and had the ability to take that idea and make it into a company. So if we can get our kids through college, get them in and through college.
And return home. Yes.
And if we keep growing kids that have the opportunities to be inventive and creative like that.
Yes.
We'll grow jobs here.
Well, that's how you create sustainable.
You can't do that magically. I mean, that's a lovely
vision. No, it's not magic.
That's
it's education.
It's a lovely vision. We don't have enough. We don't take care of children. We don't have the money. We're not putting our money into
educating
children.
All right, well, then that's part of what we need to do.
We're not putting money into recreation centers.
Well, that's what we're talking
about.
You're right.
But you've got to have the money to do it, and the money doesn't appear like that.
Well,
you've got to have an incentive.
It doesn't, but that's why you have to properly
set. Let me ask you three questions.
That's why you have to properly set your
priorities. We all agree here.
Folks, let me ask you a question about where money could – before we go back to the phones here, we only have like 10 minutes left. I'm going to get to the phones, get our callers in at 410-319-8888. Clarence, we are going to get you a call. We've had conversations on the show that we could have $1 billion in this city tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And how do you do it?
I don't know.
So far, the administration doesn't seem to be interested in this bond opportunity that is a P3 bond that other communities have done around the country, where you take the money you allocate for school construction, $60 million,
sure,
I think, in the city.
Oh, are you talking about the
Greenville
facility?
Model.
And
it'll take $2.8 billion to reconstruct schools in this town, but we can get $1 billion that pay off a low-interest loan over 20 years,
sure,
put people to work, create better schools. That would put a lot of Baltimoreans to work.
Sure.
Why aren't we doing it?
Well, what makes you think that we wouldn't do it?
So far, it doesn't seem to be anybody.
So far, it's just now. But I think that that model is gaining a lot of traction here in Baltimore City, and I would not be at all surprised that we move forward with it, and I think we should. We can get our kids into decent school facilities and keep those young families here.
Work.
We can get
that's what
the
I'm
families
interested in.
To work building and helping out, designing those buildings, and we can... So we can put a lot of people to work. We can take care of our children in the buildings where they go to school. And I think that that is gaining a lot of traction here in Baltimore. And before you know it, I think we'll be there.
Let me just open the phones here. Get Clarence moving along. Clarence, let me get a couple good comments on the air. Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Welcome.
It's a no-brainer with the housing situation in Baltimore City. All you have to do is simply take 10 of those houses and get a crew of skilled workers on the city payroll, renovate those, then rent them out, and by the time you get through with those, the money that the income off of those houses are paying the salaries of those who are going to do the next 10. That's really a no-brainer. So everybody's sitting around waiting for some developer to come in or a private investor to take over these houses. The city can do that itself, and why they haven't did it, it's just beyond me. As far as the urban gardening goes, I would like to see the city take all these people with these bright ideas and sit them down in a room and say, hey, I've got this amount of space over here that we're going to do this on not a massive scale but a larger scale where you can build these gardens in one location, I mean strategically locate them around the cities. Then you can incorporate seniors that don't have anything to do in these buildings, you know, sitting around all day, have them do some of the work in there. You can have the kids come in. That needs to be not only on the individuals that are out there trying to do it, but the city has to get involved in it.
Okay.
That's an industry within itself.
Good idea.
Let me just get another call in here so we can hear these ideas.
Thank you.
And let's go to Keith in Northeast. You're on the air.
How you doing, Mark?
Welcome.
Hi, Keith.
First of all, I would like to say that, you know, I think you need, man, you need somebody that's going to go out on a trade mission, you know, and try to get some manufacturing jobs in the city. Now, you know, going down to Harbor East and the Harbor and everything like that, you know, that's a tech-savvy place. And I don't mean no harm, but, you know, you got to do something for the underbelly of the city, not the people that's going to come in, could come in from other states and other places with MBAs right. And everything like that to take these jobs. You got to do something for the underbelly. Now, you know what? I'm looking at this the state center project that's supposed to be coming up that the governor got today. Now, are you going to tell me that it's going to be contractors, all outside contracting companies from New Jersey and New York? And you got people here that can do the job. That's my comment.
All right.
Thank you.
And let's
buy local.
And I'll read this here.
Right.
One of my concerns is transparency, which I believe Councilman Stokes has taken the lead on. If citizens are to be engaged in Baltimore, I think an open and visible government is a good start. One component of this could be through recording our local government meetings. Although I wasn't completely behind Occupy Baltimore, I commend them for hosting meetings via the Internet. And while we do have a cable channel here for government matters, not everyone makes use of this, while those with access to the web is increasing daily. All this being said, will Baltimore ever see a government and council meetings over the Internet through streaming media and archiving? The interest exists here, but will it ever exist in City Hall?
I think it's a great idea.
Great idea. Yep, absolutely.
We have 3 minutes to break here.
Okay. So, I'm still going to push we need to undersell our land. You know, you talk about bringing manufacturing. Look, people want free. We give millions. How many times do I have to say this? We give millions of dollars to the big guys. Give the money to the manufacturers, the small guys.
The gardeners.
The gardeners. Yes. Give the money to them because they're going to create the jobs.
Farmers.
Have the small guys get the money. We don't give it to the small guys. We don't give them a tax break.
I know. I just went through that in the city council. I lost my bill.
So, Nick, you ready for all this?
Yeah, I'm excited. The one thing I can say is you can continue to sit back and allow deterioration to occur, but if you don't try to come up with innovative, creative ways that's going to truly sustain and grow our city, we're going to run into problems. I think that, as I said earlier, the crossroad of all of our systemic issues starts with our children, and we have to put an added focus and priority on the growth of our city with our children.
Well, I look forward to that because it should be exciting year because the last two budgets had nothing to do with children. We cut children. And so I'm glad that Councilman Mosby is here. That's one more vote with Mary Pat and Carl and a few others, hopefully, that we can change the budget this year because our budget is not youth-centered.
It's not youth-centered, and we didn't talk about rec centers. We didn't get to that, which I wanted to get to. Mm.
And we will have to have a time where we get to them because we have a commitment now to keep all the rec centers open. until June 30th. But what happens after that? And we better know now what we're doing so that we can make sure to save and keep our own and to and make them valuable rec centers.
Let me close if I can open this email, but it's not working, so I can't get it up, which is too bad. Kelly Ray wrote something in really nice about the three of you.
And you went and your commuter, it,
it's
computer's
computer,
not
the,
working?
The thing is
Kelly
not
Ray,
so.
Thank you very much.
So, but I will get it to you all in 40 so you can see nice things that said all,
thank
to
you.
All three of you.
We'll all be glad to have it.
One of them was, Nick, that congratulations, and she knows your mother is smiling down on you right now.
Thank you.
God bless you. So, Nick Mosby, Mary Pat Clark, Carl Stokes, thanks for joining us. And we'll,
thank you, Mark.
We'll
thank
come
you,
back
Mark.
After the first of the year and continue the discussion.
Let's talk rec centers then.
Let's talk rec centers and other ideas.
We didn't get to really the tips and pilots and why I called for a moratorium and moving forward.
And we'll talk about that too. So we'll have all that on the air here. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for serving the people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to remind you all the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. The number is 1-800-638-7781. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Harrison. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto, a senior here at Morgan State University. Welcome to our staff. Our intern is Alex Pearson. We're engineered tonight by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and find out information about our guests and their work and how to contact them, just visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.